Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. The big day is tomorrow, and some of you may already be prepping your birds and sides. But for those of you who aren't, we have some pointers to make sure your meal goes off without a hitch. Sam Sifton is the author of Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well, and gives us his tips for cooking on this high-pressure and stressful day.
There's an enormous amount of pressure when it comes to Thanksgiving. Most Americans don't cook like this, you know, every week or even four or five times a year. They only do it once a year. That's the only time they have 20 people in their house, and they worry if they have the, you know, enough silverware and tableware to do it. They worry about the size of the turkey, the number of side dishes they've signed up. They begin to collapse upon themselves in anxiety. And what this book is about is saying, hey, it's going to be okay. We can plan this out. This weekend is a good time to start planning it out and getting ready to move toward the holiday and have a great Thanksgiving, the best you've ever had.
I think a lot of people are scared to try something new because of having all these people around and adding new dishes rather than just sticking with the old standbys.
That's right. They are. And here's what I'm here to tell them. They're right to be. It's a terrible idea to make something for the first time for a huge number of people. That's not the way restaurants would do it. It's not the way chefs do it, and it's not the way home cooks should do it either. The reason you're freaked out about whether this newfangled sweet potato souffle is going to work is you've never made it before. You have no idea whether it's going to work. And that's stress-inducing. It's anxiety-provoking, and I think you should avoid it. The food magazines that we read and the newspapers that I write for and that others write for, you know, every year we got to come up with a new way to sell this idea of Thanksgiving and what could be new about it and how do we do new things. And sure, there's some great new ideas that come along every year. But I think that Thanksgiving is not the time to introduce them to yourself for the first time. So what my book says is let's concentrate on the fundamentals, on making a really great roast turkey, on making the best mashed potatoes in the world, on making a really, really good moist dressing that's got a crispy top that's just the way you want it to be. I'm working on how to make Brussels sprouts appetizing even to picky children, and figuring out how to make the holiday sing on its own merits before we start adding kind of fancy curlicues to it.
So let's take a look at the turkey. You have a great recipe for a simple roast turkey, and this is an even more simple roast turkey.
That's right. That's right. I think it's just, basically what we're using here is, you know, butter and herbs, butter and salt and pepper, in order to flavor the bird and to create the most important thing to create in a roast turkey. It's true of roast chicken as well, is that the skin be tight and taut against the meat, forming a kind of blanket around it, but a firm blanket, or almost like a crust. That crisp skin that we all like to eat so much is really important to the cooking process because it helps keep the juices in the bird and keep the meat moist. So I really encourage, you know, you dry that bird well before you put it in the oven.
And what about brining your turkey?
Well, as I say in the book, I think brining is a fashion. Brining comes in and out of fashion the way hemlines go up and down in women's fashion. And I think there are times when a brine is really helpful. If you're cooking a wild bird or a heritage breed bird, a bird that is much leaner than a typical commercial bird, brining helps. It helps keep moisture in the bird when there isn't a lot of fat to provide it otherwise. But I think, you know, the birds that you see stacked in the freezer units at the supermarket, you know, you can make a good turkey with those without brining, and you don't need to do it. And again, I think it's not something you need to do for the first time on Thanksgiving. I think that's the sort of thing you can mess around with, you know, a chicken or a capon or even a small turkey at some other time of the year, and then determine whether you want to bring that into your Thanksgiving rotation afterward.
And you had mentioned the perfect mashed potatoes, which I think a lot of people sometimes are just a little too stiff or too runny.
Isn't it funny when that happens, those disasters? You just got to smile and let them roll over you when it happens. The fact of the matter is, you know, I think for mashed potatoes, you want to the usual problem with mashed potatoes is that they're not buttery enough or they're not creamy enough, that people think that mashed potatoes, you know, these Yukon Golds are such a perfect potato for mashing, and they become very creamy on their own. But if you don't add a lot of, you know, cream and butter to them, they don't have that perfect mashed potato taste. And I think it's sometimes when I think about it, I go up to about 300 feet and look down at myself while I'm making mashed potatoes. I think, that's really a lot of butter you're putting in there, pal. And it is a lot of butter. But hey, this is the one meal of the year where we're not going to think about that, where we're not going to think about diet, where we're not going to think about health. We're going to think about delicious, and we're going to think about family, and we're going to think about bounty.
Since we are in the Northeast, you have a maple glazed carrots with black pepper, and we just think of maple syrup when we think of the Northeast.
Oh, absolutely. That's a recipe that comes straight out of my childhood, straight out of my grandmother cooking on a wood stove in coastal Maine on a cast iron griddle and just having those things go all evening. We used to eat those, oh, golly, I mean, a couple times a month, because that's a side dish that goes great with turkey, but it also goes great with chicken or even pork. And you can just make them on the stovetop and just cook them real slow, get them super caramelized, and then hit them with that black pepper at the end. You know, when my kids were little, they didn't like the black pepper so much, and I'd make a double batch, and they'd woof down the, you know, just the sweet ones, and then I'd break it for the grown-ups with a lot of black pepper on it. Mm. It's a delicious dish.
It sounds so good. And then cranberry sauce, it's one of those things that it doesn't have to come out of a can. And it's something that I think people only think about when it comes to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I'm not going to judge those who still use the canned cranberry sauce. And in fact, I always have a can of cranberry sauce in my larder in the pantry because, you know, there's sometimes when it's just the perfect thing, you know, and you really want to have it and you don't have access to fresh cranberries. So that time you can open the can. But I would argue that making cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving, indeed it is the very first thing that I do. It's the first thing that I cook every year. And it marks the opening of the season for me, is so ridiculously simple that there's no reason that we all shouldn't do it. If you can boil water, you can make cranberries. All you do is put that bag of fresh cranberries into a pot, add a couple handfuls of sugar, a couple glugs of orange juice, heat it until the berries begin to pop. Let them pop, 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 about 30 seconds worth, 40 seconds. Stir it. You're done. That's going to set up beautifully into a much better cranberry sauce than anything you'll get out of a can. And at about the same price of the can, all in, even when they're on sale, which they are this week.
And the good thing is, too, is you can make it the day before. You don't have to make it on Thanksgiving. And that way, all the flavors get to meld together.
That's absolutely true. This is true of a lot of the dishes that we see. You can make a dressing ahead of time, a stuffing ahead of time, and it'll be, you know, even better for the time spent kind of melding together, as you say.
You know, the best part are the leftovers the next day and the weekend after, depending on how much turkey you have left. And you have some really great ideas of ways that we can use the turkey after Thanksgiving.
That's right. We start, of course, with the first turkey sandwich after Thanksgiving, which I usually consume late on Thursday night, with just the light of the refrigerator showing the kitchen and the darkness as I put it together. I love that. I mean, when else can, what other time of the year can you have stuffing on your sandwich? But Thanksgiving, and that's always delicious. But you know, then there are some real questions going into the next couple of days about what it is that you can do. And I've been thinking about that for years and working on a lot of recipes. And here we have, you know, I put together there's a turkey risotto in there turkey broth used as the flavoring agent of the stock for the rice as it swells up, and then shred some turkey meat in there and wild mushrooms. That's delicious. There's a turkey gumbo in there that's quite delicious. And you can do any number of things. You can even depart the American larder and make a kind of spicy Asian turkey salad and do that on cups of lettuce, and that's a nice lunch with a glass of white wine on the weekend following. There's so many delicious things that we can do to the turkey after we've eaten it for the Thanksgiving meal.
The name of the book is Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much for having me. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Again, the name of Sam Sifton's book is Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. It is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.